Welcome to Polycast, the official podcast of a Appalton Civilization site.
Yes, indeed. That is the voice of Sava, guest co-host for this week. I'm Daniel Quick, known as Dan Q on Appalton's forums. So, Sava, who do you know around here?
Well, I know Dan and Imran.
Hey!
but I don't know the other individual on with us right now.
That would be Maki. Hello!
He was all excited that a woman was posting on our site.
Actually, no, I
like,
couldn't.
Dude.
Yeah, I didn't believe it. Whenever you hear that there's a woman on the internet, it's like, no. There's no such thing as women on the internet.
Send all
now
hate
you
mail.
Can hear it for real. There is a woman on the internet.
Except for Maki. We have the only one.
Perhaps Sava would prefer that he be mentioned as Turbo.
Yeah, Turbo or Laser. So I'm like an American calling those.
So no, I'm not going to refer to you as Turbo Sava Charge or Laser Sava Pointer, okay? I'm not going to refer you to any of that. I'm not even going to say Turbo Sava Charge or Laser Sava Pointer because that would just please your ego. And you're only a guest co-host, so...
Oh.
No, owned.
So I guess we just refer to you as Sava, like Cher.
Yeah, I just have one name. Actually, I've got two names, but I'm afraid of mentioning the other one because then Ming will know where I live, and you know he's pretty close to me. He lives in which is not that far from. So he'll have to come and give me a beat down. Better just keep it as soft. No, I'm just kidding, though. Ming's a nice guy. We met at one of the poly meets. And...
Well, Sava, you certainly do think highly of yourself that Ming would actually go out of his way to give you a personal beat down. I mean,
no, you probably send one of his minions after me, though. You need to get, like, a laugh track and applause and everything, because... I don't know. It's like we say Sava, and then there's nothing. And
well, I'm not sure it'd be really that different if we had an audience anyway.
Probably most everyone would probably be yelling, "You suck," and I can give the audience a finger, and that's all right.
Now, this is not a visual medium, so...
No, I was talking about my index finger.
Oh,
yeah. Well,
because this is a family
show. Yeah, what's wrong with you, Dan? I mean, yeah, instant.
It's a twisted family show.
I don't want to be a part of any family that would have me.
Oh, man, it'd be like my family.
In the news, we look at Galactic Civilizations 2 Dark Avatar going gold, Baba Yetu being performed with symphony background, and Infogrames restructuring in a positive direction.
In this week's podcast, we'll discuss the ups and downs of AI bribery.
In the Senate, we debate our favorite economic civic, to raise or not to raise, look at a new diplomatic option a very much required, whether we should have nuclear power plants and the purpose of the Three Gorges Dam, and finally, railroads or factories. Then in the mailbag, we respond to a listener's feedback on Episode 7. There's more still. After the news, listen for details on how you could win a lifetime subscription to Appalton Plus, Appalton's optional subscription service.
Hot damn.
Hot damn. Hot fork. Nope. You see, Sava, this is the way it usually goes. I make really bad jokes, and sometimes they laugh, sometimes they don't.
The news?
News.
News. The first news, I guess, is Galactic Civilizations 2 Dark Avatar goes gold.
That's gold, Jerry. Solid gold.
My favorite game.
What's that thing? You might still be
But at least I figured...
Not feeling the love.
At least I figured out the
not
name.
Not feeling the love, Imran.
I figured out
not
the name,
the
damn it. I don't ask what the hell is Dark Avatar anymore. That's a step in the right direction, isn't it?
And what's the parent title's full name?
Galactic Civilizations 2 Dreadlords?
Wow. I'm impressed.
I know.
Did you just read that off your
screen? No, I didn't. That I know.
So yes, Dark Avatar, the first expansion for Galcif 2, comes with a $29.95 price tag. You can have it shipped on CD as well as being able to download it directly from Stardock. And if you choose the CD option, you can also download it as well, so you don't even have to make the choice. I guess it really comes into a consideration for shipping and handling charges.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, you remember, a few polycasts ago we talked about the online distribution way of doing business. I think, it's a great idea that they're, allowing it online and they're allowing it to be shipped. I mean, from what I've heard, I haven't, we joke about it, I haven't played the game, but Stardock has been very good to its potential customers and everything, allowing them the easiest ways to get the products for, the original Galciv and Galciv, the original Galciv 2 and now that Dark Avatar from Galciv 2 and the copy protection hubbub they had. They didn't have any, that horrible copy protection stuff. And now, I guess, they're allowing a downloadable version of their expansion. So, and I don't know if you noticed, Dan, but it's being released on February 14th. There'll be a lot of disappointed girlfriends. Well, that's assuming yeah.
You can get a Valentine's Day gift for yourself. I love me.
We already know that, Dan.
But there might be a number of happy boyfriends.
Yeah, but, you'd have to give them that present, after they go to dinner or something, are we going to dinner? I just have to conquer this empire.
Patch this. Yeah, I just have to patch the game. It won't take long. I swear, honey.
How does next Valentine's Day sound for you?
Always the romantic.
So if you don't have the original Galciv 2, you need that for the expansion, so you can either purchase it separately for $19.95 or combined as the Gold Edition, similar to what was done with Civ 3 and its 3 expansion packs, and you can get the combined edition, Gold Edition, for $44.95, which is $5 off combining the titles individually.
Ooh, kill.
That sounds like a good deal. And, Imran mentioned about earlier podcast episode, we were talking about being able to download this game and digital rights management and protection schemes, and Stardock has been against the old you need the CD/DVD/whatever in your drive in order to be able to play it, and so there have been some questions about, hasn't that made the game easier to pirate? And the answer is yes, but if you're thinking about pirating it, think about all the times you get annoyed when you have to put the CD in the drive. And then you go out and pirate a game that you don't have to do that with, you're stealing money from Stardock and other companies who would follow suit. So if you want this to succeed, then support Stardock. And you know what would be even better? Is if you bought it through a poll. Because I said so.
Who saw that coming?
You did? You can read my mind? Oh, no.
Well, that and you're just like the world's most perfect show.
Oh,
why, thank you.
Thank you. No, like you were saying, they got into that whole, if you remember, that whole hubbub with the, I guess the people that make one of the copy protection schemes, one of their people, released a cracked copy of the game or something on the website.
Yes.
Yeah, that whole scandal. But, Stardock has always been one to say, we're not going to punish our paying customers because some idiots decide to actually pirate the game, So I think that has gained them probably more business by taking a principled stand on it.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Sorry, I didn't
Stardock
have
was great.
I petered out.
That was apparent. you petered out. What about Jeff? That was a bad joke, but you can see that coming. It's me. But no, Stardock has been very good to react quite quickly to when they learned about this leak, and the site where the torrent of Galciv 2 was posted was removed quite quickly. So that was good to see. Some of the discussion I've seen related, since we're actually talking about the expansion Going Gold, in case anybody forgot the exact topic, which is fine.
We had a topic?
It's true. According to project lead Brad Frogboy Wardell, the download will be roughly 300 meg. And I know there were some concerns about people on dial-up. One person's comment was, I might as well get it shipped on CD because it'll probably arrive before I finish downloading it. Now, the only thing I'm not certain about, and I haven't seen any points to this either from Stardock or someone else who perhaps might be in the know, is whether or not if you start downloading the expansion, whether you can resume download, which is a common feature on web servers, but I'm not sure if that's the case. But if you can resume it, then I don't think that's a particular issue.
Mm.
If anybody out there knows, phone or write in. You see how I'm pushing that? That was really smooth.
Smooth. Well, I hope they do well. So, you know, they seem to be a good company, and they seem to be creating interesting games from what I've heard and read. They got a lot of good press this year, got a lot of nominations for awards and turn-based strategy. Well, it's a good thing, and hopefully this rolls out very smoothly, and they have much success. The next news topic is Baba Yetu with Symphony Background.
Yeah, not anything against this news item, or any news item after the Going Gold announcement, but it was kind of a slow couple of weeks.
Dan, you listened to it?
I have listened to it, yes. It was. I knew this was going to be performed at the Video Games Live at the Hammersmith Apollo in London, England last November, but I hadn't heard anything about it afterwards until late January, where I saw a link to both what I'm going to call our preferred version of the recording, as of 4.5 minutes in length. What I find amusing, I have to say, about Video Games Live itself, it is the first and self-described most successful video game concert tour in the world. Well, by definition.
The only.
That's pretty safe to say. It's just like, you know, Polycast is the first and only and best Civ podcast on the internet.
I agree.
By definition. It's true.
We are to win.
Yay.
Now, as I said, there's another version that's been referenced that was uploaded to YouTube a day later. It's the same length, but I found the bass in that recording to be even more overpowering, and I didn't, you know, having listened to the song already, otherwise, as it was intended in-game and as the MP3 by itself, I think it really failed to produce a representative reproduction of the recording. So I feel sorry for anyone who comes across the YouTube recording only, hasn't heard the song before, and figures, what the heck? I don't know, I think the audio particularly suffers with the lead vocal, and the echo in the Apollo is also quite pronounced, so that doesn't seem to help any. Like, this is not a high-quality recording, admittedly, but the price is right.
You can look at the video portion of that recording, people are going to realize it's not that high quality.
Now, here's a question. What type of person goes to a Video Games Live concert? I mean, I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
I wondered that, too.
I mean, even I'm not that pathetic. I mean, come on now.
Oh,
well, now they did get out of the house.
Oh, that's true. Got to give them props for that. Yeah, it's kind of weird because, you know, I was looking at some of the other related videos, I guess, and they showed, like, you know, the crowd of people sitting there, and I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, I was under, you know, the assumption when I guess, just looked at this, that it was just in, like, some sort of studio or something like that, but no. That just scares me. It's Video Games Live. There's a bunch of... Aren't there a bunch of other, like, songs or whatnot? Or what is it?
Yes, that was the point. To highlight soundtracks from different games, including some console titles, I think, which, again, I forgive you.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Everybody knows the graphics have been getting so much better on games, but nobody, I don't think, has ever pointed out how much better the music has gotten. I mean, since about 2000, there's tracks I hear in games that are comparable to things I hear in movies, and some of them are just moving. This whole thing was a great way to highlight that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's partially a function of previews, but in fairness to the previewers, I mean, often it's very easy to take screenshots, and everybody goes, ooh, but then if they wanted to, for example, post a music clip, there's often, well, now, wait a minute here, copyright issues, that sort of thing. So you're kind of limited in terms of what you can see before the game comes out. So you're building up the hype about the graphics. And, yeah, at the same time, you start playing in, and especially in strategy games, everybody talks about the leaps and bounds that graphics have made. And that's true, and that's wonderful, but As Mackie said, audio has been plugging away as well, but, you know, you could say it's been the wind beneath graphics wings.
You didn't go there.
I went there. But, you know, we might hear some more about this video games live concert. Perhaps when two people sat down to listen to it, they found that they were both Civ players. And then they fell in love. And then they went and bought Gal Civ 2 Dark Avatar and played it on Valentine's Day. And then they got married. And what was their wedding song? Baba Yetu. Oh.
Tying everything in. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm the man. Or something.
Or something.
Yeah, I definitely have to go with the something on that one. Sorry about that, Dan.
That's okay. You were just agreeing with everybody else. That's fine. I can find new co-hosts.
Kick off. Maki, Amron, and Sava. It's just me again. You know, speaking of Baba Yetu, I mean, I think everyone remembers, everyone who has played Civ 4 on our site remembers, you know, when they first loaded up and heard Baba Yetu. And what a, I mean, I don't know, that just was kind of cool because, you know, the song was really matched the tone of the Civ game. And you know, it was really, it really was inspiring, I guess it was, to play Civ. So at least it gets recognized by others, but great pick on music by the crew, and especially when you loaded up the game and heard that one. That was a really good tune.
I think it's a particularly interesting point when you take into account that was not going to be the original
theme
for Civ 4, but they couldn't include the original because of copyright issues. So, what a great pinch. You see how I'm pleasing Imran and Sava by including a sports reference?
That's right. What was the original going to be?
I don't know. I haven't heard it.
I think it was the theme from Rocky.
Dun, dun, dun.
You know, you hear that, and then, you know, you get in a game, and you just want to go and, you know, raise every city to the ground. And I think they wanted the game to be a little bit more
balanced. Dan wants to do that anyway.
I was going to say.
Or maybe it was the theme from Jaws.
Uh-oh.
Oh, crap.
I'm scared. I don't want to play the game no more.
So I guess now we're on to Infogrames, Restructure of Positive Direction.
Yes. I like the fact that, you know, 493 million shares were issued with a value of 0.01 euro each. And, you know, I guess we'll see if they actually, get a lot of shareholders to jump on board and buy Infogrames. I don't know how successful they'll be with their offering, but.
Well, it seemed to be quite successful. They talked about the offering being oversubscribed nearly 1.7 times after taking into account how many rights holders first bought some of these new shares, and then they went and bought additional shares, and it was kind of overdrawn. So I think they're happy. It's been these shares have been reflected in its stock price since the 24th of January, but all of the money they raised has already been spoken for in terms of spending. 74 million euro. Wow.
Ooh.
Gone.
Dang. Jeez, 74 million euro.
It's a nice little chunk of change.
Yeah, and everything that they're spending it on is like covering costs, operating costs, like promissory notes and short-term facility and fees and commissions. Boring.
And they're spending it on.
Spending on.
And they're spending it on console games. And it's like, no.
Come on, where's the sequel to Hot Coffee? Let's get more. Oh, wait. Got news? Email news at apolton.net or send a message to Dan Q, Luminatus, Snoopy369, or Grand Patrol via Bolton's forums at apolton.net/forums. You try to get people to actually call into the show. What I was thinking of doing is taking two clips and just inserting them somewhere in a segment.
What's this about? Pancakes and maple syrup?
And if people call in, and if they tell us what minute, perhaps it's like, oh yes, you can hear this sound in the 19th minute of the show, for example. If they guess that correctly, and they're the first to call in, no, hear me out, then they get a lifetime subscription and plus.
Not open to those who are mods and staff members.
Well, technically we do.
Yes, because you already.
Oh, wow, cool.
Call in with your answers. In North America, 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44-20-7871-7659. That's 44-20-7871-POLY. Or Skype us directly through using Skype from Skype.com. Direct your calls to the PolyCast.
Modcast time?
Yep.
Yay! Woo!
Welcome to the Modcast, where we talk about hot issues in the forums.
AI bribery.
Bribery.
E Forever Man wanted to, in his opening post on this one, wanted to know if AI ever bribed a human player, where, you know, they offered you something to go to war, or has the AI ever tried to act, I guess, like a human player in that respect? I haven't noticed it.
Nope.
No.
Well, that was a quick topic.
Like I've had some civs contact me and say, hey, help us fight another AI, but never been asked to stop trading, and they never offer me anything. It's just like, please help us. And I'm like, no, they don't.
What's in it for me?
I love and affection. Whoa, hey now.
But it's a good idea.
We prefer shiny.
Add, if possibly. It can, you know, be added. I mean, it would make a more immersive game, I believe, in terms of single player, where the AI will try to bribe you to fight other people or whatnot. It's a good question.
It is. Now, it's true we don't want the AI to become too human-like and take over the world, but...
Skynet.
There's definite room for improvement before we get to that point. PatCon here says, I find it particularly irksome when some pissant civ, with nothing to offer me, wants to stop me trading with a longtime friend with whom I am trading resources without offering to replace the lost resources or gold. Yeah, see, that's the kind of, unquote, that's the kind of strategy that a human player would take into consideration. So, come on. I suppose some of their personalities, when they ask you for something but aren't going to give it anything in return, maybe that fits. Isabella. Token Gallop. Not mentioning anybody specifically. Not that they can do anything to me because, you know, they're dead.
They'll haunt you from the grave, Dan.
I had the weirdest dream. They're all going to kill me.
So I guess this really isn't a function of difficulty level. I mean, D Forever Man, who made this post, doesn't say what level he was playing at or plays at, and I've only maxed out at Warlord level so far, so...
Well, the higher up you get, the more you're getting asked to just give us stuff. No, you know.
Oh, so unless you like that sort of thing.
You like that?
I guess that's not very good.
No, they're demanding me, and I'm saying, don't.
Okay, then.
Shall we move on, I guess, to the Senate?
Not the real Senate, but our Senate. Oh, right, that's politics. Oh, sorry.
Nope.
Welcome to the Senate. In this section, we talk about game strategy.
The first one is favorite Civ 4 economic Civ. Let's see. The economic Civs are decentralization, which of course we all love, mercantilism, free market, state property, and environmentalism. I guess, you know, we don't have to go through the benefits.
Free market for to win.
What's that now, Mackie? Free market?
Free market.
Yes. Free market.
I echo her. Free market.
Yeah, we gotta go free market because, let's see, we're not communists, and, let's see, environmentalism is really just communism with a different name, so we can't do that, and mercantilism, sure, why not, that's communism also. Yeah, free market. Any questions?
Okay, well,
no, okay.
Well, let's start with what we can agree on, because, of course, that's boring. Decentralization... Bye-bye now.
It has low upkeep.
Bye-bye. It also has no benefits. Well, better. That's something to say for it. I have no benefits, but I'm low upkeep. But yeah, there's a mentioned environmentalism there. You know, I think it would be of greater benefit if you could have it earlier on in the game, maybe on higher difficulty levels, or if you're on a map with, you know, tropical world to help with some of your health problems, you know, with your jungles and your floodplains. But
yeah.
But really, later on, you know, as you said, I really don't see much of a benefit for it, unless, I suppose, and this is going to tie into a topic coming up, if you've got a really far-flung empire and you've got coal plants coming out of, you know, whatever, maybe, maybe.
Yeah, but if you had that far-flung of an empire, I'd be inclined to go for state property because there's no maintenance cost from distance.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You're reading my mind again, or my notes.
I'm awesome.
You hammer.
Yeah, but free market gives you lots of cash, and cash is good and shiny. How can you say no?
That's true, but state property helps save you money.
Uh-oh. Well, saving is not as sexy.
It's no good getting a ton of money.
Wow.
And this is why so many people in America and everywhere are in debt.
Yeah. Now, at the same time, as soon as mercantilism becomes available, I will dump decentralization like a hot potato. I mean,
well, of course.
You know, as long as you don't have something you're having to import for, like, happiness or something, because that cuts that off.
True.
Mm.
True. And then with environmentalism, it seems to be the one civic that can never be passed through the United Nations as a global civic, hardly ever, which is probably a good thing, because we've ratted on the United Nations before, but...
I think I got it to pass once.
They should call it the
what?
Kyoto. and then there's something.
Politics? Why are we talking about politics? That must be another podcast. Remember, we're not supposed to talk about that because who was it wanted us to talk about that?
Oh,
remember we had to
right.
say no?
I guess we all agree. Oh, that's no fun.
Oh, no. That's
I guess on the next podcast we'll discuss religion and maybe that'll get heated.
Oh, maybe. But really, then, I think free market and mercantilism are really as close as you can get to truly opposite civics.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Too bad you can't have the free specialist and the trade routes. That would be awesome.
Yeah, it might be too powerful, though. I mean, everyone basically picks free market. Not everyone, but most people basically pick free market anyway because of the extra money. You had a specialist, and, well, it'd be hard to, you know, convince people to pick anything else.
Yeah.
On a higher difficulty level, if you were a really small empire and you didn't have much trading going outside of you, then that free specialist would be worth the trade-off.
With regards to environmentalism, I see it as kind of a useless civic. I mean, you know, unless you have an empire where you have a lot of, you know, cities near your jungles, I just don't see a lot of use for it. And, you know, that's kind of the problem I find with some of the civics, not just in the economics, is, you know, it's not so much with me a question of finding the right ones in terms of benefits, but I just don't see, you know, sort of the right combination of benefits because nothing really, you know, does what I would like it to do. And maybe that's a question of balance that would have to be, you know, ironed out, you know, in more gameplay, or maybe this is sort of a personal preference of mine, but for instance, I'd like to rather see, you know, more powerful civics, you know, to have to choose between five really good economic civics instead of just five civics that are just kind of like, you know, I don't know if anyone else sort of feels that way, but...
If you had five really good economic civics, then... Where would strategy come into play as far as how you're going to decide which one you're going to use? Like, if they're all really good, which I suppose someone could argue, except for decentralization, that they're all good in some benefit. I guess it's, you know, again, having the differences between, because we talked about, you know, as even you mentioned, unless you've got a far-flung empire with, you know, lots of jungles around, which by the time environmentalism comes around, if you still got jungles around, maybe we have something else we need to talk about as a Civ player, but like if you just kind of get them all up to more or less the same level in terms of being good,
yeah.
However we want to define that, then some people might say, strategy, come back.
Well, I'd like
But to... no, I hear what you're saying, though. It would be nice to see environmentalism, you know, actually have some kind of tangible benefit for more than just that seemingly one or two scenarios.
Yeah, it's not that I'd like to see them overly powerful. It's just that I'd like to see them more effective in the sense that, you know, you could have a more, I guess, balanced combination of civics, and you could have more flexibility in choosing which ones you, you know, implement based upon your game situation, so that, you know, environmentalism, maybe it's called something else and available early on, and, you know, because it may be a bonus to a civilization that finds itself smack dab in the middle of the jungle, maybe if you find yourself starting in the jungle, you are able to use it the way the, you know, Mayans or Incans or, you know, Aztecs would have used it, you know, because I think it would be a tremendous benefit to a civilization like that, you know, historically, but in the game, I just don't find myself using that kind of civic, and it's almost like if we're going to have five civics, we want to be able to use them different points in the game for different situations, but just feel like, you know, everyone sort of gravitates towards one or two different civics at one point in the game, and it doesn't seem very balanced to me. I don't know if anyone else agrees or not. Maybe I'm just on my own on this.
But. No, I mean, it's a good point, because, you know, in other different areas, like, say, the government area, you have, you know, you definitely go through all of them. Maybe the same thing with legal. I mean, there's a definite reason where you might want to switch among the later ones. In the economy section, I mean, there really isn't too much of an incentive to switch to environmentalism. I mean, even if there is, even, you know, in some aspects, depending on your empire, you could switch to state property. I mean, and that's not, you know, something that, you know, people would consider to be that weird. But, I mean, I think a lot of people look at environmentalism and are like, well, why is this here? Or why is it so weird?
Yeah, because by the time it comes into play, you have so many other health buildings at that point. Unless you're playing on a high level, you don't need it. So if there was some way to have it as a medieval version, like he was saying,
what would it be in medieval version?
Especially if you happen to be that unlucky person who got stuck in the middle of the jungle to start.
Now the question is, what would you? Would it be in the middle medieval era? I guess they weren't exactly very environmental.
Further back is what I was trying to
conservation.
Say. Don't make me look at the tech tree.
But yeah, even as, you know, Sava mentioned about, with some of the civics and tying it into specific, civilizations, I mean, we've got, unique units now, and we've got, leader traits. I know the leader traits can be randomized, but anyway, you know, we've got unique units. Why not have it so that in some cases, if you're playing a particular civ, you decide to switch to a certain civic, perhaps that there is a slight difference in what the benefit is or what the upkeep is, or perhaps as you go along in the technology tree, perhaps if you had mercantilism at the time you found you got banking in, I don't know, when are you going to get banking? I'll just pick out a number because it sounds interesting. Say in 1000 AD, and then in 2000 AD, perhaps if you're still at mercantilism, you've now advanced farther up the technology tree, and now the benefits have changed. Ooh.
Interesting.
Well, I think it's important to say, given the feedback that we received on Episode 7, Impaler, if you know of a mod that exists that actually does some of this, please enlighten us.
Might be a little complicated. Just a little.
Yeah, that might be a little complicated.
Maybe in a future expansion.
There's an idea for the second expansion pack. It's still being worked on, so just work that in there. That's good.
Fix environmentalism.
I know. That'll just take you, you know, a few months or something of play testing, but that's not my problem. I think just briefly before we move on, seeing, Sava, as you weren't a part of previous podcasts where we talked about the other civics, we've talked about government, legal, and labor. If you just wanted to give a quick shout to what your favorite ones of those are, if you want, or you can pass. So that way when people are listening and they want to compare and find out who their favorite hosts are, we don't get, how can I compare when not everyone has told me their favorite civic?
Oh, just...
I'm so
just lost. Up, Dan. They all know it's Maki.
Bounce.
I don't know. It depends on the situation, I suppose. I use a different combination of civics depending on, you know, how large my empire is and at what stage of development, so...
What's this about?
I don't really have any favorites, I guess.
So you're saying they're all winners?
Yeah.
How diplomatic.
That's right.
How disappointing. Trying to please everyone. Oh, boo.
I know. Although I will say this, though, I don't like any of the starting civics. They all suck. Like despotism, bad. Barbarism, bad. Tribalism, bad. Centralization, bad.
Get me out of these, quick.
Those are Dan's favorites. Our next topic, to raise or not to raise? That is the question.
That is the question. Oh, that was almost in stereo.
The answer is raise.
So yeah, this cyber gamer who has a spelling problem.
maybe his E key is just broken.
Oh, that could be.
Or it was when he registered.
Yeah, because raise has an E at the end of it.
Yeah.
He played a game on settler level and built no military units outside of warriors and archers to protect my cities until I was ready to attack. Well, the first comment is, that really does sound like settler level. Not that I would know.
Settler.
He's got a super list of 36 per turn. Gold super list.
Ooh. Super gifts.
Ooh. Oh. And so, yeah, so he's got that.
Shiny.
He's got all those religions, and he's got the surplus, and he's capturing cities left and right and wants to know whether he should keep
them. Well, and the reason is because he had a plus 36 in gold to negative 100 per turn because he captured over a dozen cities and decided to install governors in them rather than raising them. I guess this speaks to, the attempts to curb ICS Infinite Cities Lease, which led to Ian having to eat a cardboard box, which is great fun. But, I mean, this is one of the main components of that, which is, more cities, a hell of a lot more maintenance and upkeep. So, in a lot of respects, it is good to raise when you realize that you might not be able to afford this.
Yes, although I have to say, I prefer Infinite City Sprawl.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm more sneezy.
You see, it's like the discussion between Trekker and Trekkie. There are no Trekkers, okay? It's Trekkie.
Ooh.
Bring it on.
Somewhat sensitive. Oh, yeah, but when you start, you have to think about that before you go to war with the Civ. Is you have to look at the cities you think you can take, and you have to decide which ones you're going to keep. Usually the high population cities are the cities that have wonders, and the ones that you can just live without.
Yes, financial management.
Yeah, you have to have a plan. Imagine that.
Plan?
Yeah, a plan helps.
Plan, that sounds like strategy. Oh, no. So as Cordelian says, keep an eye on your expenses. How much your impact civic costs and city maintenance are having. Of course, unless you're under state property. Ooh,
hey.
Podcast. Hey. And don't forget the increase in maintenance costs for all cities, which, of course, as you go along, that really becomes your largest cost. Mm-hmm. So, again, to quote Cordelian, to keep a city, you'll have to reasonably be certain that it will be turning a surplus in a relatively short space of time, unquote. But isn't it kind of fair to qualify this by noting you need to also take into consideration how much coin you have banked? I mean, if you're on settler level especially, I wouldn't be surprised. You've got all those religions and all those cities, whatnot. he's got 36 plus, but he doesn't tell us how much he has in the bank.
True.
I mean, if you've got 6,000 or 7,000 in the bank, if you want to go negative 10, or even a negative 100, if you've got 6,000 or 7,000, I think you could go a few turns. And bleed just a little bit.
Yeah, long enough for them to stop rioting and then find out how much.
And you may want to, you may want to do a raising if there's. Of course, you don't want to raise cities that have wonders in them and whatnot, but you may want to...
Or holy cities. That doesn't apply with this guy.
No, because he has all of them. Maybe a good thing to do would be, to maybe raise one city and keep the one right next to it so you get just so for border-wise.
Or when you find those little fishing villages up in the tundra.
But of course, always the pain is some other guy is going to have his little ship and get up there and be like, ooh, free land, and just pop himself down next to you. So there is that problem you might want to think about at some point, too. But
well, yeah, there's that problem. But if your culture is kicking their butt, I think that's probably not going to survive. Right. You'll be able to get it.
The tundra is pretty big.
Eventually.
Well, in some maps.
Some maps, yeah. I mean, when you're deciding whether you're going to raise it or not, besides financial management, I mean, if getting that city is more or less right on your border, and it's not going to overlap an existing city you have too much, because, you know, sometimes cities will be founded, or sometimes I will found cities close so that there's a considerable overlap. So even if it's really close to you, so there's not going to be that much of a maintenance cost. Okay, so you don't have state property, you've got maintenance, you've got the distance consideration, but if it's going to overlap too much, you probably wouldn't want to keep it then either. I don't probably wouldn't be a benefit to you too much. But I think this particular person doesn't really have a concern about raising cities and annoying the other civs, because apparently he's using gunships and his opponents have longbowmen. So they can be pissed. They can be pissed off all they want.
Yeah, I'm thinking he's gonna win that game. What do you think?
Like, oh, we care for our brothers and sisters of the faith, but you raised our cities. But your brothers and sisters of our faith, I'm so confused. And you see, the AI can't handle that.
Oh. In that situation, I would just go ahead and raise. It's like, come on now. Gunships, longbowmen, just raise them. Get over with.
What's that? Get the conquest win done already?
Raise the difficulty level.
Quit
play another game.
Score.
So.
Stop wasting
our time.
Exactly.
All hate mail. What?
Yeah. But I think we could copy also some recommendations from this GreenDay_234 that really apply regardless of difficulty level. Courthouses, good idea. Focus workers on building cottages and new territories for new commerce, that sounds good. And also installing merchant specialists where possible. He also mentions permanent alliances, but what's the point?
If you're that close to winning, not much. But cottages are always a good thing.
Except when farms would be better. Oh, no, wait, we've talked about this before.
Let's not get back into this.
We've had this discussion, Dan. Get up with the program.
Next.
New diplomatic option very much required.
Yes. Apparently, the son of David would like nothing better with the advent of military tradition to be able to sign a non-aggression pact, basically a 10 turns of peace with, I guess, whoever co-signs it. Basically, he wants somewhat of a truce diplomatic option.
I don't see how it would be that difficult to implement, and seems reasonable to me. So if any of our listeners know of a mod out there that addresses this, see, we're never going to be called upon again for not mentioning mod.
Apparently not. Son of David even says in his post, in fact, that this is such a elegant and great idea, I cannot bear to play this game anymore without it. So someone help him out.
But isn't that the default state of peace, though? Yeah, think about it. I mean, there's no treaty saying you're at peace, that you're not being aggressive, but you're not being aggressive.
You want something that says you cannot attack me for 10 turns. You can't break it.
Yeah, just kind of like a temporary
peace
treaty.
So something for an extra diplomatic minus when you do go to war with somebody, or?
Perhaps.
That's where I'm trying to go, because it's almost the same thing as just normally being in peace, except you're signing an agreement.
Yeah, see, there was no discussion on this, because no one responded to him.
Pancakes and maple syrup? Mmm.
Sorry.
And the threat is a couple of weeks old, so.
Yeah, because everybody did like I did and went, wait a minute. Don't you already have this? Not making fun of you, we're just saying.
But he's the son of David. I mean, come on.
My uncle's also the son of David.
Uh-oh. Your uncle is posting now?
No.
Maybe. And you ignored him?
Nuclear power plants?
Yes.
And the purposes of the Three Gorges Dam, where I guess we're combining those two?
Yeah, since there's some natural interrelation between the two. Do you notice the username for this inquiry? Possibility? That sounds appropriate for some reason.
Cole Phoenix, in his first response to possibility, says he usually races to Plastisk and Three Gorges instead of making nuclear power plants. So, okay, I see the tie.
But if you get beat to Plastic Man and get beat to the Three Gorges, well, then what?
Well, first of all, if you don't have a suitable city in your empire.
Yeah, if you happen to be playing on a map and you luck out and don't have any cities or on a river.
Yeah, which is, you know, one of the reasons why I love to play on Pangaea. But if someone builds Three Gorges Dam, or if perhaps a neighboring city has a city that would be good to build a Three Gorges Dam, there's a good reason to go to war. But, yeah, I suppose if that doesn't happen, then I would certainly go with coal plants over nuclear plants. Anytime.
Yeah, because all of that random possibility is supposed to be low. It has this really bad habit of happening when you least need it to. It's like, I think it was programmed with Murphy's Law.
But I think at the same time, it should be emphasized that not every one of your cities really needs a power plant. I mean, it's nice if you can get the Three Gorges Dam. So then every city on that continent, Aaron suggested a couple of coal plants in key cities that won't hit their healthy cap and need the early boost. Okay. But I think if you're willing to categorize it as a key city, then probably your health cap is already reasonably high enough because you've had a chance to build some improvements to help out.
And if you haven't already built an aqueduct, that would cancel it out, I believe.
Yeah. So, and then there's this Pope Jubal. Never heard of him before. Also says that these key cities had best be focused on production and not food or commerce. Or indeed, if you're building coal plants in cities where you're not really emphasizing production, then...
Yeah, it's a kind of a waste, and you're adding pollution. Well, I guess that's what, environmentalism is for, huh?
Well, yes, I suppose now there tie into an earlier discussion. If you can't build the gorge, and you have perhaps a particularly large empire with very substantial cities, so you have a lot of key cities, and you're looking at a lot of coal plants, perhaps switching to environmentalism is something worth looking into. Perhaps. We found a use for environmentalism in the later game. Oh my gosh.
No!
The world just came to an end.
Uh-oh. What have we become?
Now, if in, like, SimCity, I think it was the original SimCity and SimCity 2000, you had nuclear plants, and then you could also eventually build fission plants. So in kind of a very loose tie-in, if advancing to fission removed the possibility of a meltdown, I might consider nuclear plants. Is there a mod out there for that? You need to tell us, Impaler, because we're not very good at finding these things out.
That's actually not a bad idea, though. That's a, that actually something I would like to see implemented by someone or for Axis. I'm sure you're listening. Yeah, but that would definitely go a long way towards making nuclear plants more desirable.
And I suppose there'll be the naysayer saying, totally eliminating the possibility, that's not realistic. Well, then fine, just make the possibility less. So instead of, what is it right now, like 1 in 50 turns or something like that, make it 1 in 5,000 or something. See? Problem solved.
Good job, Dan.
I thought so.
I agree.
If you build coal plants and then you build the wonder, you know, it will eliminate the unhealthy in each city that has a coal plant. Although, don't you find it amusing that even after you build that wonder, you could still build power plants? Even hydro, which is like...
I have nothing else to build. I'm on Shetland. I mean, it is kind of silly. I mean, they should, after you build that wonder, they should say, no, we're going to stop you from any potential idiotness and basically not allow you to build any more power plants. Railroads are factories. It says, imagine you're in the beginning of the industrial era. You already have steam engine and steel. Coal has been revealed, and you have some, no immediate threat. I don't know what it's supposed to be after some, but anyway, should you research first assembly line and start building factories and coal plants, or railroad and put the workers at work?
Choo-choo.
I will go with railroads.
Yeah, because building railroads on the squares that you have mines and stuff on increases their production. So you could get the factories faster once you research
them. Yeah, I agree.
Plus, also, if you have a far-flung empire, you start building railroads, hey, you'll be able to get those units to the front line faster.
That's true.
Yeah, just because it looks like there's no immediate alternative doesn't mean that somebody's not thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, it allows for quicker defense, moving people around faster. You can always increase your shields later or hammers. The railroads really are a good defense type of improvement because of the quickness you can move your units around in case of a threat from one of your neighbors. So, you know, definitely is, I think, worth it to go for railroads first. I'm trying to think of an issue where you would want to go for factories and coal plants first.
Yeah, because also with railroads, you can get machine gunners without ruffling, which is a really good infantry.
Oh, that's right.
A really, really good one.
And it's like, okay, I'm building my factories. I don't need railroads, blah, blah, blah. What? My neighbor switched to police state? Well, that's okay. That's okay. That's fine. They switched to vassalage or nationhood. Okay. Well, see, we try to be balanced on Polycast, but we can't even BS our way into thinking why you
have
factories first.
Says, was it the factory and coal plant provide 60% plus the shield, or not the hammer, hammers over a forge, which is a huge boost, and at most railroad and grassland, lumber mill provides a 50% boost. So maybe if some people really need a quick hammer boost, or a quicker hammer boost, perhaps they want to go that way. I don't know if they're, perhaps if they're already, you know, in a war and their troops are already kind of engaged, plan on having it for a while going on. They might want the hammer increase. I don't know.
Yeah, if you were already in a war about that time, then it would be worth it to get assembly line in factories first. But if you're in a period of peace, it might be better to increase the difference in between what you would get from railroading the mines or building the factory. If you add the railroading the mines plus the mobility, that's worth the extra hammers you would get from the factory.
Yeah, I'm more of a builder, so you know, I usually will go for railroads first.
And don't forget about ironworks coming with steel.
How could we forget about ironworks? I mean, come on, there's ironworks.
Welcome to the mailbag, where we answer listener mail. Now, from episode 7, Impaler WRG was pleased, but first noted the shorter-than-usual length. As I've noted in a follow-up, this is to be the new norm. You can read about that on the Polycast forum. Yes, it does exist, Imran, it's true.
There's something outside the off-topic?
Yeah, there's a whole side.
It's true.
What is all with all this Civ thing? I don't know if I approve.
Taylor WRG also comments on two of our segments specifically. First, our first modcast topic from last time where we talked about Barbarian States and Civ 4. I guess there's a mod hosted at CFC, and I had to look that up, but apparently... a Civilization Fanatic Center over at civfanatics.com that turns developing barbarian states into real empires. I'm a real empire now.
Could you explain, Dan, that you play on pre-settler and therefore you don't have time for that stuff?
Oh, so you've obviously played this mod then. Tell us about
it. No, I haven't. I play on pre-settler, man.
Oh, okay.
He plays on, I want to harass Dan about it.
I play custom level, just me.
I can handle the competition.
So just so we have thoroughness in our reporting, it's called Barbarian Civ version 8.5 by JDog5000.
JDog.
It was released last May, so I suppose this year he's probably JDog6000. In any event, barbarian cities, if left to their own devices, will eventually settle down into full-blown civs.
Ooh. I gotta change my name to S-Dog. Like 7,000.
And Dan will be D-Dog. Wait, that doesn't work so well.
And then in our research lab topic in episode 7 on nuclear war and whether there should be a specific state of nuclear war or not, according to Impaler WRG, there are some mods for nuclear warfare that try to simulate MAD, or mutually assured destruction. So go out and fire and find them. Yeah, go out and fire. Good. Go out and find them. I guess both works.
Indeed.
Has anyone ever called in? You had to tell them no.
No, never. Nobody likes us.
Help break this cycle. Call in today in North America, 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44-20-7871-7659. That's 44-20-7871-POLY. Or Skype us directly. If you're using Skype from Skype.com, direct your calls to The Polycast. more information on the show, including how to write in, where to find the official Polycast forum, and how to subscribe to the RSS feed, log on to the official Polycast website at polycast.apolton.net. Type more quietly.
Yeah, damn. Seriously.
How does that?
That's what my freaking keyboard makes, damn it.
But did you know that you can also subscribe to an RSS feed to keep you up to date on the show?
Ooh.
It's true.
Wait, really?
At home? At home? At work? That's a good idea, but...
Well, I spend too much time posting at work to do any of that.
You could listen and post at the same time. You should be a multitasker. 21st century, come on now. What is wrong with you?
A lot.
That's magic.
Whoa,
nice.
Oh, it's magic. Oh, sorry.
Not so quiet.
I guess we should move on.
And, of course, I know some people are missing not having Polycast every week. We do have lives, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Wait, who said that?
We do?
Apparently. But if you're missing Polycast every week, don't forget our cut side series, which features snippets of what's now making it the final episode.
Mm.
But I saved them from digital oblivion.
Oh. Well, thank you, Dan.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us at Polycast today. This is Imran Siddiqui. Imran Siddiqui on the forums. I've been joined by Dan.
I know.
Who is, you know, Dan, you on the forums. Maka?
Makalua.
Makalua.
You can't say it because he's been in the Kalua. Oh.
And our guest, Sama.
Yo.
Sama bien.
This is horrible. I'm turning into Dan, for God's sake.
I was thinking the same thing.
I thought we were just supposed to, like, argue about politics and capitalism and communism. I didn't realize this was a gaming
set. Well, actually, no. To be perfectly honest, there are some people on, like, the off-topic who basically have not played Civ.
We have communities within the community. Sounds
should
cheap.
We promote that? I don't know.
If you can make money off of it, why not?
Ooh.
Money?
Yeah, Dan, more money.
Money. Sava, thank you for joining us.
All right, yes. Thanks for having me, guys. This was a lot of fun. I liked it. If you guys ever do one with, like, off-topic or politics, it'd be really fun. I'd like to do something like that.
See, Dan? See?
See? Come on, eventually we're going to run out of Civ stuff to talk about.
I don't want to wait for money.
I don't want to wait.
This is why they have me on this show.
See ya.
Later. Wouldn't want to be here.
That's what we say. Record date February 3rd, 2007. Soundtrack courtesy Civilization IV and the Warlords Expansion Pack. Copyright 2007 Apolton Civilization site at apolton.net.